This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Johannesburg and Fine Music Radio in Cape Town.
Well, global shares inched higher during the course of today as the promise of further policy stimulus from China to counteract the economic hit from novel coronavirus has calmed nervous investors. Trading was light, though, with U.S. stocks and bonds shut for a public holiday. President's Day over in the U.S., both the pan-European stock 600 and Germany's DAX reached record highs before pairing some of those gains. Overall, the MSCI All-Country World Index, which tracks shares across 47 countries, was up marginally on the day, and we started the week on the front foot on the JSE, up around 0.6% on the day. The JSE capping its second week of gains on Friday last week, with riskier assets still in favour. The All Share was up just over a percent for the week last week. And just to recap, over in the US, the major indices posted a second straight weekly gain as well, even as the number of reported coronavirus cases has jumped. The S&P 500 and the NASDAQ rising 1.5% and 2.2% respectively for the week, while the Dow climbed around 1%. Listen, Mainchies, our independent financial consultant, has your view from the market in our Fine Music Radio studio. As I was saying with Tubba Tubba, Listen, novel coronavirus, what coronavirus?
Well, that's my point, whether it's important or not. And a lot of people are giving opinions, and they don't really understand the way this thing is spread and how it's spread. At the moment, we're very concerned with containing it, and I'm not sure just how successful that has been. Every day you find a new country, a new death, a new something. And they say, oh, it's getting better. Well, it will do, and I do say that, you know, a vaccine cannot be too far away, because now they have quite a body of people. I shouldn't use that word, but still, they have quite a number of people who have recovered from the virus and therefore have developed antibodies, and from those antibodies they can develop a vaccine. Now, it's a question of who gets to the market first, and you know how plentiful that will be. And I just say to people, you know, if I said to you, look, there's a vaccine for this new coronavirus, just form a line and we'll give you a mild dose of it. I'm not sure how many people are going to form that line. You might just have to say, you will have this injection.
Well, what is the role, you say that tongue-in-cheek, but what is the role of the Fourth Estate in all of this? The media, certainly it's the only thing that seems to have spread faster than the rate of infection with the novel coronavirus, is the rate of misinformation and fake news and fear-mongering.
Well, the whole deal is that, you know, you expect that the media will be circumspect, and they won't go in for, as you say, any of the above. You go back to politicians, particularly, you know, what I call officialdom, and by definition, and the seat in which they sit, they are not allowed to rumour monger or suggest things could get very bad. Somebody like Bill Gates may do that, but other people will just say, no, you know, it's under control. We think we've got it under control. We're using everything known to us to be able to contain this. But the real proof of that is how soon it spreads. Now, again, if you look, it has spread to a number of countries. Of course, the epicenter is in Wuhan in China, and it's spread to other provinces, and it's spread to Hong Kong, and we know all about that. It has spread to Taiwan. It has spread to Singapore. Now, I know people who won't go through Singapore at this point just because of the danger. As it turns out, the death rate, even if you get it, is quite low. So the actual social impact is going to be quite small. But the big impact, very definitely, is on economies where factories have closed. And the story I tell everybody, and it's very obscure, but there's a city in New Zealand called Gisborne, and only recently have they taken up logging again after a disastrous fire some 20-odd years ago. Now the trees have grown, they can cut the logs. The workers have been laid off. Why? Because the ports of China cannot take them in.
Very interesting. And we see the Chinese authorities isn't trying to incentivize workers and companies to get back to work, such as the situation on the ground. So the question is very much centered for markets on what are the likely economic consequences of all of this.
No, this is the point, you know, and the way best analogy I've got is, imagine you have a little streamlet, and somebody comes along and drops a great big rock in the middle. And if it's big enough, it will stop the flow for a while. But the stuff coming downstream will eventually go over the rock around it, or create a diversion to keep going. And I think that's where we are. You know, downstream of the Wuhan production is stuck. They're not getting. By the same token, things are building up ahead of it, as I mentioned on the log situation. The Chinese ports have said, don't load anymore, we can't take them on, because the trucks that are supposed to take them to Wuhan are not running.
Right. Yeah.
So again, I just think people must understand this, you know, a feed through to the second and third and fourth effects. You get unemployment threatening the budget deficit in New Zealand. We haven't really thought of it and seen how it would affect here. Most certainly, the most obvious and logical place that you will see it is in our exports to China. They will all be stopped at different ports. I'm not so worried about a cruise liner not being allowed to dock. You know, that's only got 3,500 people on it, of which, you know, a goodly number are infected. By the way, keeping them together is not a good idea, because you'll almost certainly get all 3,000. Do you know that? I mean, the story is that people were confined to their cabins and the food was brought to them.
It's the stuff of horror stories, in fact. Listen to me, docked on a cruise ship several people who are infected with this virus, and probably with very little else that you can do about it, as you say, with food being brought to your cabins. I'd hate to be in that situation. But the biggest story, as you say, is the impact, the butterfly effect of what happens when a virus has a deadly outbreak in a small province, or I say a small province, relatively speaking, in Chinese terms, and the impact that it is now having all over the world's economy, so far as New Zealand's logging industry. But I want to talk about South Africa now. And while it could be said that the state of our nation has been that of a patient maybe with coronavirus in ICU over the last several years, I saw enough things in the sonar for hope that we might be discharged into high care soon. I'm not saying the patient's getting out of hospital, but out of ICU into high care. Do you think that's fair in an assessment?
I do. There are a number of caveats, but there definitely were a few items, and again, not many of them were picked up. People, you know, came out with the idea that there wasn't enough detail. I'm saying, golly, I don't know if you read this, but there was a terrific amount of detail, not in the fine detail of what we're happening from day to day, but if you look at the list of various areas that the president has instituted and has task teams and commissions and councils on, I wonder that he's got time to actually have a cup of tea. It's just quite frightening. But to pick up on your positive point, and you know, I think a lot of people read this from the top down, and it was very right and proper that he said, you know, it's 100 years we're celebrating, you know, Mandela's birth, and you know, the birth of a new nation, and we stand behind all the values that he stood for. The amazing thing is the second paragraph is almost a mea culpa, saying it was, you know, we have made mistakes. I genuinely haven't seen that in print. Now, it doesn't really come through in a number of places, but you know that I sent you a copy of the thing where I'd highlighted where I thought they were saying we goofed. That one didn't go well. By the way, I don't have to tell you how many blue lines there were from Eskom to SAA.
I agree with you. There were a lot of blue lines, which is surprising if you look over the years at the sort of mea culpa that we've seen by the ruling party, which is refreshing. And as you say, there are also lots of commitments, particularly in the energy space. And we know that Eskom is the state-owned elephant in the room. So everyone was really looking towards the State of the Nation address to provide some guidance on the energy future. And what we saw during the speech was the president stating that the introduction of IPPs is really front and centre. Unequivocally, independent power producers are going to be big parts of the solution here, opening bid window 5. And for me, that is still a big positive, because what we have seen is a lot of private sector capital mobilized through the various bid windows from 1 to 4.5 until we had the brakes slammed on it by Eskom and a lot of investors sort of packing up and going home. If we reopen this, it could be a key tool or flywheel to get confidence going specifically in the build around energy again.
You know, but again, you know, desperate times call for desperate measures, and that's certainly the way they've approached this. And instead of going on the blame game and saying, whose fault is this? They've said, what can we do about it? What do we have to do? And, you know, there's climate change, the trend is against fossil fuels. We're going to go another way. Let's do this. Let's do that. Very positive sentences, particularly under energy. But as you and I know, all of that is going to take a fair bit of time. But if I just change slightly, because I looked at particularly at the bottom end of the table, and if I read these words, you know, I think they are quite something. It says, to strengthen the capacity of the state and increase accountability. That's a new word for me in these. I will be signing performance agreements with all ministers before the end of this month. Their targets are contained in the medium-term strategic framework and will be made public so that we can hold those who were elected into office to account. My goodness me, I think that should have been, as you say, front and centre.
How refreshing, really, though, refreshing. The big issue for me, as I have to say goodbye, unfortunately, because we are running out of time, is in the execution, because there is a slip twixt cup and lip. Lister Mainshees, our independent analyst down in our Fine Music Radio studio. Let's take a quick break.